You've tried to change, you've done the work, and you still find yourself asking, why do I keep doing this? Today, I want to give you a framework that might maybe finally answer that question, and it's called Internal Family Systems, or IFS. And it explains why you react so differently depending on who you're with. It explains why self-compassion feels impossible sometimes, no matter how many times someone tells you to practice it, and why you might keep choosing the same kind of person even when you know better. Nothing's wrong with you. You might just be missing a map. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Relationships Made Easy podcast, where I give you the exact steps to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, or most importantly, yourself. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the bossy Jewish mom you didn't know you needed. Each week, you'll get no-nonsense, research-backed strategies served with humor and love, so you can stop second-guessing yourself and start having the relationships you deserve. You'll always leave knowing exactly what to say and do to shift your relationships for the better. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. You know who I am. This topic, IFS, and I want to be very always transparent up front. I'm no expert. This isn't something that I am like certified to do or something, some sort of therapy, you know. But I've been around it for many years. I've definitely done all the reading. I definitely use it sometimes with some of my clients. And a lot of folks in my One Love Collective on Substack were asking about it. So I just felt like it was time to do an episode. And as I said in the very beginning, you know, I know you've done the work, right? This is who it's for. You've done the work. You've read the books. You listen to the podcasts, right? Maybe even sat across from a therapist or two. You know your patterns. You can name your attachment style. You know, you understand at least intellectually why you do what you do. And yet you still spiral sometimes when someone maybe pulls away. Maybe you still shut down when you need to speak up, right? You still find yourself somehow in a relationship that feels like the last one with, you know, a different face. So at some point, if you're honest, you've probably asked yourself, what is wrong with me? And of course, nothing is wrong with you. I love you. Nothing's wrong with you. But you might be missing, I'm going to call it a map. That's what I said in the beginning. And that's what I mean. There's like a IFS, internal family systems, it's a therapeutic framework. And it was developed by a man named Dr. Richard Schwartz. I think he's in my tribe. I don't know, but that's my guess, which of course, you know, part of the love. And it's kind of quietly become one of the most important ideas in modern psychology. I'm just going to say that. And you know, I study everything. So it's research supported, widely used in trauma treatment and couples work. And it really offers something I think that most frameworks don't, because not a way to fix yourself, but a way to really understand yourself, including the parts you've been probably trying to get rid of for years. So today I'm going to give you a real introduction to IFS, you know, what it is, where it came from, how it really works. And then I'm going to show you how it answers the three questions I hear from you the most, okay? Why you react so completely differently depending on who you're with, okay? Why self-compassion feels genuinely impossible to practice even when you want to, and why you keep choosing probably the same kind of person no matter how many times you've promised yourself you wouldn't do that again, or no matter how many times you think it's different. So let's get into it. And like I said, I'm going to be honest, I've used IFS with clients to real effect. But when I was putting this episode together, it really reminded me that I probably should be using it far more than I do. That's what I thought. I think by the end, you're going to really understand why. So what is IFS, Internal Family Systems, and where did it come from? And again, Dr. Richard Schwartz, he says he didn't set out to build a new model. He was a trained family systems therapist working with clients who had eating disorders in the early 80s. And he kept running into something his training had him prepared him for. His clients described their inner world in parts, right? They'd say things like, oh, part of me wants to binge, but another part hates me for it. Or I know I should leave this relationship, but something in me won't let me go, right? So at first, you know, Schwartz was treating this like a metaphor, I think like all of us do as therapists, but he was, you know, God bless him, he was listening more carefully than a lot of us. And the more carefully he listened, the more consistent he realized it became. And that these weren't just figures of speech. There seemed to be sort of distinct internal voices or states, each with its own perspective, each with its own emotional tone, its own agenda. And when he started working with those parts, the way a family therapist works with family members, you know, approaching them with curiosity rather than trying to eliminate them or pathologize them, his clients improved in ways they hadn't before. So it's amazing. And the result was internal family systems, IFS, which is now a widely studied and empirically supported therapeutic model. It's been on SAMHSA's National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs and Practices for years. And SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. That's where those of us who believe in research go, you know, that they're not getting funded by a drug company or something to say something, you know, or whatever, to say something. So they're their own entity. And it's been on what we call the evidence-based programs list, programs and practices list, and has research supporting it in a bunch of areas. In there's research showing its efficacy in treating trauma, depression, rheumatoid arthritis, relationship satisfaction. It's pretty impressive. And Schwartz has since written extensively on this model. And his book, there's a great book, No Bad Parts. That's what you're going to hear about. And that's the book I'm going to reference a lot, although some other ones too. That book really brought IFS to a much wider general audience. And the title is actually the whole thesis, right? There are no bad parts. Every part of you developed for a reason, and every part is trying to help you, even the ones causing the most distress or the most damage, right? So the central premise is this: the mind is not a single unified thing. It's sort of naturally multiple. And again, we're not pathologizing. This isn't multiple personality disorder or something like that, which isn't really a thing like that. But anyway, it's really about that you contain many parts. And again, that's not pathology. That's how humans are built. So the goal of IFS isn't to eliminate your difficult parts or, you know, silence your inner critic. It's to help all of your parts work together. And that's led by something Schwartz calls the self, with like a capital S, right? So what is the self in ISS and IFS? So the self, again, capital S, that's the core of who you are, distinct from all your parts. Schwartz describes it, he says it's like, he says it's characterized by what he calls the 8 C's, okay? Which are curiosity, calm, clarity, compassion, confidence, creativity, courage, and connectedness. Those 8, all right? And my free download for today is related to this. How much self energy are you accessing right now, like using those 8 C's? But anyway, we'll talk about that later. But it's a great free download. If all this is interesting to you, you're going to love that. So it's not a spiritual concept, okay? Although, you know, definitely there's some people who experience it that way, but it's more, I want to say this really well, it's more like your most grounded, clear-headed, open-hearted state. That I said that very well just then. That was good. The version of you that isn't triggered, isn't defensive, isn't performing for others. When you're in what he calls self energy, again, with like a capital S, that self energy, you can be with hard things without being overwhelmed by them. You can hear criticism without collapsing. You can feel sad, but not drown in it. you can be close to someone without losing yourself, right? It's like you on the best of you on steroids, right? It's that. And most of us don't live from self, that self, very often, sadly. Not because it's not there, but because it gets crowded out by our parts, which are doing what they were designed to do. They're protecting us. So understanding those parts is really where IFS becomes, I think, genuinely useful. And again, so the free download for this week is, I'm calling it the 8 C's self-energy check. So how much self-energy are you accessing right now? That's what we're doing. So anyway, and you can, whenever I talk about, I mean, there's a lot of research in today's episode. When I talk about the free download or the Therapy to Go bundles or anything else, you can access all that below the video if you're watching on YouTube. Please like and subscribe if you are, and or leave a comment, say hi. Or you can get it on the website. You'll find the episodes, go to this episode, and all the goodies are there, including a full blog. I always do a full blog, which is not a transcript. It's a blog. So if you want, you don't want to take notes right now, you just want to listen, you can go back later and you don't want to listen again to the whole podcast. I can't imagine why with my melodious voice, but you can go back and just read the blog. Or if, you know, a lot of times I think people have told me that there's someone, like maybe they have a partner who doesn't like to listen to podcasts, but will read a blog, or a mom or somebody else. And so this is a great thing that you can send to people. You can send them the blog if they're not a podcast listener. All right. So what are your parts and what are they actually doing? Okay, let's get there. So IFS describes 3 categories of parts, okay? He talks about managers, firefighters, and exiles, those 3. Managers, firefighters, and exiles. I've always hated that word exile, but anyway. But let me explain. And each one has a job, and each one developed that job for a reason that made sense at some earlier point in your life. The problem isn't the parts. The problem is when those jobs stop serving your current life. But, you know, your parts haven't gotten the memo, so they're still operating. Okay. So what are manager parts, and why are they running so much of your life? Okay. Managers are your proactive protectors. Their job is to keep pain away before it even has a chance to hit. They do this by controlling, planning, achieving, pleasing, and critiquing. And they're the parts that keep you functioning, that get you out of bed in the morning, that make sure you don't say the wrong thing at the wrong moment at, you know, dinner or in a meeting. Managers often show up as a bunch of things, though. So what I see in my practice is managers will show up as that inner critic, you know, the voice that tells you you're not good enough, not thin enough, not tall enough, not successful enough, not smart enough, whatever. It's harsh because it believes that if it keeps you small, you know, you won't try things that could get you rejected or hurt. So it kind of goes after you. The perfectionist, that part that can't submit work until it's exactly right, that, you know, replays the conversations looking for what you did wrong, that sets standards that no human being can consistently meet. Again, it believes that if you're perfect enough, no one can criticize you. Your people pleaser is also part of this, you know, the part that monitors other people's moods and adjusts you accordingly. It learned early that keeping others happy keeps you safe. So that's why that's there. Of course, the controller, my favorite part. What do I call myself? A control enthusiast. That's the part that needs to know the plan, have the exit strategy, stay in charge. This is your part that it believes that if you stay in control, the thing you're afraid of can't happen to you. That's what's going on there. And then, of course, the part of this is also your achiever, the part that keeps you busy and productive and proving your worth, right, through your output. You know, the contingent self-worth, it believes your value is contingent on what you do, not who you are. I did an entire episode on contingent self-worth. I'll link again to that. And all I did one on controlling, what to do if you're a control enthusiast like me, all that. So I'll link to all those in the show notes, on the blog, I mean. We don't really have show notes anymore. We just have a blog. So, and you want to notice that every single one of these is trying to help you. The inner critic, it isn't mean just for the fun of it. It's terrified. Your people pleaser isn't weak. It's strategic. The achiever isn't just ambitious. It's again, like protecting something. And Schwartz describes how does he say? He said he describes managers as essentially running the system so that the more deeply wounded parts, what he calls the exiles, never have to be felt. That's what's happening there. They're the day-to-day management team, right? Keeping the operations running smoothly enough that no one has to open the door to the basement where all the scary uglies live. So, and here's the thing about managers. They're exhausting to live with. If your inner critic is running your daily life, you're in a constant state of low-grade self-attack, right? If your people pleaser is at the helm, you're chronically scanning your environment for other people's emotional states instead of your own. Okay, so these parts were built for crisis situations, not for a lifetime of daily operation. But unless something changes, okay, they don't stand down. They're not going to stand down. All right, so that's one. Two, this is the firefighter parts, right? And they often act in ways that you later regret. So if managers are proactive, firefighters are reactive, okay? When your exile pain, sorry, my nose is itching. When exile pain breaks through the manager's defenses, which is going to happen sometimes, when the thing you've been holding back finally forces its way to the surface, firefighters show up fast and hard to put the fire out, and they will do it by any means necessary. Firefighters don't care about consequences. They will burn your house down. They don't care what your manager thinks about the calorie count or the morning after regret or the text you shouldn't have sent. They care about one thing, stopping the pain right now. So firefighter behavior looks like my favorite, you know, drugs and alcohol, binging on food or really any substance, shopping, screens, all, you know, electronics, all that. Anything that creates a fast neurochemical shift away from what you were feeling, gambling, all that. Explosive rage goes here, that the disproportionate blow up that comes out of nowhere scares you and everyone around you and leaves you feeling, ashamed. Isn't that always fun? Dissociation or numbness lives here too. The part of you that just, you know, goes away when things get too hard. You know, you're in the room, but you're not there. Impulsive romantic escalation also here. That sudden intensity with someone new as a way to feel something different or to feel something at all. That's why you're on those apps all the time, you know, going back and forth or just dating compulsively. What else is here? Oh, the blurt, you know, blurting things out, saying something that blows up a situation you've been like kind of carefully managing. The firefighter sometimes decides that the controlled approach isn't working and try something more drastic is basically what happens. Firefighters, they aren't reckless because they're bad. They're reckless because the pain they're responding to feels that bad. The exile material they're trying to contain, it's just so overwhelming that extreme measures, they feel proportionate, believe it or not, from that place. From the inside, the binge or the blow up or the shutdown, it's not irrational. It's the only available exit from something that feels so intolerable. And firefighters, for this reason, really in my experience, or I guess even from the research, tend to generate the most shame. The behavior is visible, often disruptive, and it's really hard to explain afterwards. I know, because you come into my office and try to explain it to me and it doesn't work. I don't know why I did that. You know, boy, is almost always a firefighter. Anytime you've said that, I can't believe I did that. I don't know why I did that. I'm so ashamed that I did that. I'm so sad I did that. Usually a firefighter. And I want to be clear, understanding this doesn't excuse the behavior. That's not what we're trying to do. It helps you stop treating yourself like a broken person and start addressing what's actually happening underneath. That's what we're trying to do. Okay, and then this third category are the exiles. Okay, so exiles are the parts of you that got hurt. Usually early, usually by something that happened in your family of origin, though not always. And they carry the emotions, the beliefs, the body sensations from those experiences. And it's like they're frozen in time, still waiting for something to change. When something painful happens to a child and the adults in that child's world aren't equipped to help them process it, the system does the next best thing. It seals it off. The exile goes underground into that scary basement. So the managers organize the rest of the personality around making sure that the wound stays hidden and protected. The firefighters stand guard, right? And there you are. And exiles often carry beliefs like, what do I see the most? Oh, I'm not enough. I'm too much. I'm unlovable. If people really knew me, they'd leave, or they wouldn't believe me, or they whatever. I'm alone and no one's coming. I want to be clear. These aren't beliefs you choose. They're conclusions a young, underdeveloped nervous system drew from experiences it couldn't fully make sense of. That's what that is. And here's what makes them so powerful in adult life. Exiles don't operate on logic. You can cognitively know in your brain, you can know you're lovable, while an exile is generating the felt sense that you're fundamentally not lovable, that you're flawed. And the two can coexist and often do. I'll tell you that right now. Exiles also carry what IFS calls burdens, the specific shame, fear, grief, worthlessness they've been holding. So the goal in IFS isn't to eliminate those parts. It's not. It's to help them unload those burdens so they don't have to keep carrying something that was never theirs to begin with. That's the goal.
I've always made every episode of this podcast with one idea in mind: to over-deliver. I want you to walk away thinking, I would have paid for that. I can't believe it's free. And in all the years I've done this show, as you know, I have never taken on a sponsor. But when Quince asked to be my very first, I said an enthusiastic yes, because Quince does exactly what I do. They over-deliver. Cashmere without cashmere prices, real washable silk, all the elevated stuff you and I love without the markup we all hate. And I'm talking 50 to 80% less than you can find anywhere else. And I'll just say it, I love an obvious bargain. I live just outside San Francisco, where the summers are more of a rumor than a season, so I wear their cashmere sweaters year-round. But there's way more than cashmere, of course. So make your summer wardrobe feel easier. Go to quince.com/RME for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/RME, which stands for Relationships Made Easy, for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/RME. The person who edited the episode you're listening to right now, I found him on Upwork 8 years ago, and he is still my guy. Same goes for the person who keeps my website from falling apart. Truly, I couldn't run my business without them, and they're the first place I go the second my plate feels too full. So when Upwork asked about sponsoring the show, it was a very easy yes. And that's true personally too, not just professionally. Upwork isn't only for entrepreneurs. A while back, I somehow agreed to run my kids' school auction. Yeah, why did I say yes to that? And I hired an assistant through Upwork who made the whole thing painless and barely cost me anything. So whether you're scaling a business or you're an overwhelmed parent staring down a school project, Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. It's free to sign up and posting a job is easy. So visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
And one more thing worth saying, let me just say this. Exiles aren't just painful. They're also where some of your most alive qualities live. Your your capacity for joy, your creativity, deep, deep feeling. And when exiles are heavily locked down, life can really feel really flat, even when nothing is technically wrong. I'll tell you that right now. So releasing exile burden doesn't just reduce pain. It often brings back the parts of yourself that felt most real. That's what is amazing. And that's what I have seen over and over. So how does this explain your life, right? So nice, Abby, firefighters, managers, exiles. Okay. Understanding managers, firefighters, and exiles in the abstract obviously is useful, but where to me IFS becomes genuinely illuminating is when you apply it to the specific things that confuse you most about yourself. So here are three questions I hear constantly and what IFS has to say about each one. Okay, so let's go there. So question one, I hear a lot, you know, why do you react so differently depending on who you're with, right? You know, Joe Schmo says your hair looks great and you are like, oh, thank you. And then your mother says your hair looks great and you're like, oh my God, she hates my hair. She's always so critical, right? Or why is she noticing my hair? Don't comment on my body or whatever, right? We can have a different reaction. So, and I think this one trips people up. Because you can be calm and grounded and again, relatively untriggered with one person and feel like a completely different human being with another, right? So maybe you're patient and self-possessed at work and then reactive and shut down with your partner. You know, you're relaxed with friends and suddenly young and defensive around your parents. You know, what's happening? So in IFS terms, different relationships activate different parts. So some people, through their behavior, their tone, or even just their resemblance to someone from your past, they activate your exile material. And when an exile gets activated, the system mobilizes. So managers get louder, firefighters go on standby, and the version of you that shows up in that relationship isn't your self with a capital S, right? It's a coalition of protectors trying to manage an activated hurt, an activated wound. And this really maps directly onto what, of course, attachment science tells us about how our nervous systems respond to close relationships, right? Your attachment system is essentially your brain's monitoring system for relational safety. You know, always scanning for cues about what the other person in front of you is about. Are they available? Are they reliable? Are they emotionally present? So when someone's behavior triggers some kind of old learning, you know, old understanding, your system doesn't respond to what's actually happening right now. You know that. It responds to the pattern it recognizes. That's why we react, not act, right? Again. We're acting again. It's old. You know, let me talk about polyvagal theory for just a minute here. You know how I've talked about polyvagal theory a lot, you know, developed by Stephen Porges. And because it's another layer here I think is important. So your nervous system runs a constant background process called neuroception, okay, where it's detecting safety and threat below your conscious level of awareness. And so a particular tone of voice, a look, a feeling, a moment of distance, you know, not responding to a text right away or something, can shift your nervous system into a defensive state before your thinking brain has any idea what happened, before it has not, it, your conscious brain is not even there. So if we were to translate this to IFS language, an exile got activated and a protector took over. See that? So in polyvagal terms, basically, your system moved out of the ventral vagal state of social engagement. You know, we like our ventral vagal state. We like that. That's when we're all like, hey, how you doing? I feel good. Let's chat, right? That's when we're in our self with a capital S. And it shifts it into fight, flight, or freeze. Yeah, I know. So these aren't separate phenomena. That's why I'm going into it, because I talk so much about your nervous system here on the podcast. it's describing the same thing from different angles. And that's why I love it. And that's why it's evidence-based. So when you wonder why you're so different in different relationships, the answer isn't that you're inconsistent or says something's wrong with you or whatever. It's that certain people and certain dynamics are activating specific parts of you that have sort of old, unresolved business attached to them. And the person in front of you isn't always who you're reacting to and probably is rarely who you're reacting to. This is also why reassurance rarely, if ever, solves relational anxiety for more than a short time. That's why I always talk about how reassurance is never the answer. And I should say never, almost never the answer. Getting reassured works like a drink works, very short term, very short term. Reassurance is directed at your thinking mind, but it's an exile operating through the body and the nervous system that's generating the anxiety. So that's why you're going to the conscious, but we have something happening to the subconscious. Do you get that's another way of saying why reassurance doesn't work. The manager seeking reassurance, they get temporary relief. I'll give it, but the exile does not change, which is why you keep having to ask for the reassurance, right? You keep having to ask again and again and again. That's why. All right. I think that's enough on that. The other question I hear a lot, people have such a hard time practicing self-compassion consistently, right? It just feels impossible to practice it or practice it consistently. I mean, how many times have you been told to be kinder to yourself? Just by me, right? To treat yourself the way you treat a good friend. Soften the inner critic. Practice self-compassion. And how many times have you sincerely tried and found it doesn't really land, that it feels sort of fake or disingenuous or like toxic positivity or something? IFS has an answer for that, right? It does. That because, and I think it's something that most self-compassion frameworks miss, I will say that. You can't access genuine self-compassion when a manager part is blocking the door to your like self with a capital S, okay? Can't happen. And of course, you know, you can't talk about self-compassion without talking about Kristen Neff, whose research on self-compassion is foundational, right? She was really one of the first ones to operationalize self-compassion so we could study it. And when she talks about self-compassion, which I've talked about before, I'll link to my old episodes on this, but she defines it with three components: self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. And again, the research on the benefits of self-compassion are extensive. But I think what IFS illuminates or really brings to light is that the internal architecture, I'm going to call it, that makes self-compassion feel either natural or impossible, depending on your system's configuration, right? That's where this comes from. Here's what's actually happening to you when you can't be kind to yourself. Your inner critic, which is again a manager part, right, believes self-compassion is dangerous. It has an unconscious bias thinking theory that something like this. If you stop being hard on yourself, you'll become complacent. You'll lower your standards. People will stop taking you seriously. You'll get hurt. That's you, right? That sounds like you, doesn't it? The critic doesn't back down because it's mean. It doubles down because it's scared. And there's often an exile underneath the critic carrying, the deep shame, the deep worthlessness. So the critic's actual job is to preemptively attack you before anyone else can, right? It's the internal version of I'll say the worst thing about myself first so it can't be used against me later. It's self-attack, it's self-defense. When you try to offer yourself compassion, this manager sees it as a threat to the entire protection strategy. I know. It's really why affirmations so often don't work. You know, you say, I'm enough. And a part of you says, no, you're not. And that second voice it's not just negativity. Again, it's a part doing its job and it will keep doing it until it feels safe enough to stand down. I know. I'm giving you a moment to absorb that. So what IFS offers, instead of trying to override or silence the critic, right? It really offers a different approach. And I think it's why it's great. It's to get curious about it. Ask it what it's afraid would happen if it stopped. That curiosity coming from, again, the self, the capital self, can and usually will begin to shift your relationship with the manager rather than just fighting it. You're not trying to defeat your inner critic. You're trying to help it trust that it doesn't have to work so hard anymore. Okay? I know. So great. By the way, I have a great Therapy to Go bundle for today. So if this is all hitting hard and you're thinking, oh my God, I want to do some work around this, I have that, but I'll talk about it later. Okay. And then the third question I said, I think this answers really well, the one I hear a lot is, you know, when you keep choosing the same kind of person, you know, you're asking yourself, why do I keep choosing the same kind of person? If I had a penny for every person who's married someone who has a substance abuse or has been in a relationship with someone with a substance abuse problem over and over, and then tells me later, they weren't drinking when I met them, or it wasn't a problem when I met them. Oh my gosh, hello, not a coincidence. Not your fault either, I want to be clear, but not a coincidence. Or just, you know, they were so nice when they seem so different, but you end up with the same kind of person over and over. This is for you. And it's probably, you know, now that I think about it, probably the question I get asked more than any other, you know, because you've been there, right? You've been through a painful relationship. You did some therapy. You did some journaling, the reflecting. It's done. You're sure you've learned the lesson. And then you find yourself in something that feels exactly like before, but with a different face on it. IFS offers, I think, one of the most cogent, coherent, thoughtful, profound explanations for why this happens. And it really starts with understanding that it isn't your conscious self-led mind doing the choosing. Hello. When exiles carry wounds around love, usually things like abandonment, unavailability, conditional acceptance, those exiles become organized around a core longing, okay, a longing. They want desperately the thing they didn't get. And the system unconsciously, again, this is below your conscious level, it's unconsciously scans for people who feel like they might finally deliver it. That's why you're with someone with a substance abuse problem over and over, and you come from a family where there was a substance abuse problem of some kind or mental illness or something real close. Because there's enough there familiar enough to feel like I didn't get it from my dad, but I could get it from this guy or this woman. You know what I'm saying? And obviously, there's a really painful irony here, right? The people most likely to feel familiar and compelling often feel that way because they resemble the original, you know, attachment figures who created the wound, who created the problem. Not because you're not drawn to suffering. That's not why. Because your nervous system recognizes that emotional template. It feels like chemistry. I know, you tell me. It feels like magnetism. This is the one. And I'm not saying sometimes it's not. Sure, sometimes it is. But often, what it actually is a match between your exile's longing and a person who fits the pattern well enough that the system believes this time might be different. This time might be the one. And this is, of course, consistent with when we talk about attachment research, when I've had those episodes before, which I'll link to, this is what those attachment researchers call earned security patterns, where adults with insecure attachment patterns, histories, tend to inadvertently, subconsciously recreate relational dynamics that mirror their early experiences. We all do it. Welcome to the club. Welcome to humanity. The brain is a prediction machine. I've said this 100 times. It looks for what it knows. And what it knows includes that relational landscape of your childhood. It includes that, again, which is kind of encoded below your level of conscious reasoning. That's your subconscious at work. This is also why genuinely healthy relationships can feel, at least initially, kind of boring. Almost boring to someone who has, if you have significant exile wounds, then it probably does feel a little boring. There's no spark, Abby. There's just no spark. There's just not, I don't know. I just don't feel it. Yeah. That's probably the best person for you. A person who is reliably kind, available, not particularly dramatic. They don't activate that familiar urgency. There's no chase. The exile doesn't recognize it as the thing it's been looking for because it doesn't match the template. It doesn't match the history. Doing the IFS work on this doesn't mean, I want to be clear, that you resign yourself to relationships without, you know, depth or feeling. It really means helping the exile understand that what it's been looking for, the repair of that original hurt, can't actually come from another person. It can only come, I know, this is hard to hear. It can't come from another person. It can only come from your own self with a capital S, your own self relating to that part with the compassion and attention it needed and didn't get. When the exile starts to trust that, the pull towards the familiar, painful pattern really begins to lose its grip. That's, I'm telling you right now. Okay, so let's wrap this up. Let me tell you about the free download and the great Therapy to Go bundle today. If this is all sounding like, oh my God, Abby, this is amazing. I want to do a little work here. I want to learn more. And I want to wrap up saying this. IFS is not a quick fix. It's a framework. It's, again, a map for understanding the internal landscape that you've been navigating without a map, right? Without one. And so maps don't solve the territory, but they change what's possible when you're moving through that territory. And what I find most compelling about Schwartz's model is what it actually asks of you. Okay, not self-improvement in the sense of becoming something you're not. Not again the suppression of parts of you that you don't like. It asks for my favorite thing. It asks for curiosity. It asks you to approach the most difficult, embarrassing, shaming, confusing parts of yourself, and ask them what they're trying to do for you, what they've been protecting, and what they need to feel safe enough to stand down, to finally stand down. And that's a different project. That's different than like fixing yourself. And for a lot of people, I have to tell you, it's the one that actually works. It really does. It's amazing. So if any of this resonated, you know, whether, you know, the inner critic that won't quit or patterns that keep repeating or reactions that make you question who you are, I've put some things together. Okay, so this week's free download, as I said, is the 8 C's self-energy check. How much self-energy are you accessing right now? So that'll really help you. And then my Therapy to Go bundle, I have these for every episode if you want to go deeper. The Therapy to Go bundle for this episode includes the free download, by the way. So you don't have to download that twice if you don't want to. But if you want to get the free download and then, you know, see if you like it, and then you'd always come back and get the bundle. So I have a bunch of stuff in here. There's a parts inventory worksheet to really help you do. It's at like a bird's eye view of where your parts show up across your whole life. So work, relationships, parenting, self-talk, all of it. There's an exile beliefs worksheet, which really helps you identify the core beliefs your exiles are carrying and tracing them to their origins. I always have journaling prompts because, boy, such good work happens with journaling part, you know, prompts. And this is for the parts work, right? So it's like sentence completions. You want to explore your different parts' origins and fears, what they need from you, you know, all that kind of stuff. What else is there's a manager and firefighter pattern tracker. So it's like a practical log for noticing when specific parts show up and what activated them. Really important. And then there's a self-energy access script sheet. I told you there was a lot in this one. It's basically language and prompts for helping you begin to relate to your parts from a place of that capital S self rather than blending in with them. So all of that, the Therapy to Go bundles are $10. And, you know, you can, if you're working with a therapist and want to maybe go down this road, this is great to do. If you're just working on your own, you don't do therapy, whatever, this is meant, again, it's Therapy to Go, right? It's meant to help you get deep. And my stuff, the reason I do it and don't send you, because you could read Schwartz's book, you know, it's a great book. Just a lot of times people want me to kind of hand you, you know, here it is in an hour instead of reading the whole book. And you can do the worksheets and really get some work done. You know, it's sort of could be a quicker way to try to get where you're trying to go. But as I said, this isn't a quick fix. This is something you would practice over time and really do the work. But I'm hoping, you know, it would get you started. Okay, that is it for today. Oh my gosh, thank you so much. And thank you for your great ideas. I'm so inspired as you can tell, I think usually by the topics you all bring to me and the questions you bring to me. I feel, as always, eternally, eternally grateful to be here with you. I really do. I love you so much. If no one told you today, you know, you are lovable. This could be some great work to get to maybe what's been elusive for a while. I'm hoping to give you yet another tool, another way to sort of get to where you're trying to go. All right. Mwah. Have an amazing week, and we're going to talk real soon. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you're loving what you're learning here, come join my One Love Collective. It's my private community where we take these conversations even deeper. You'll get a ton of bonus content, live Q&As with me, guided visualizations, journaling prompts, scripts, and an incredible community of like-minded people ready to support you as you create more ease and joy in all your relationships. It's all waiting for you at abbymetcalf.com or right on Substack. I'll see you next week.